Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Anne Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers from Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of my wonderful co-hosts with me today. First up, he's the other lore-focused writer over on Blizzard Watch, although he's known to write about warriors, like, every now and again, and that would be Matt Rossi. Hi, Rossi.
Hey, everybody. I'm not leveling, like, my 7th level 100 warrior or anything right now, because that would be crazy. That would be crazy.
You've only got 7? See,
this will be my 7th.
Will be your 7th. Okay.
Yeah, this will be my 7th. I've branched out. I have, like, other classes now at 100.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, but this will be my 7th level 100 warrior.
All right. Well, our other co-host is also no slouch to the lore, as well as shaman and other various sundry things, and that would be Joe Perez. Say hey, Joe.
Hey, everybody. I only have 5 level 100 shaman. I feel like I'm, like, not holding a flame to Rossi in this regard. I got to step it up.
Back in the old days, man, I had, like, 1 level 100 for every race. And that
I
was, like,
have, like, 2 max level characters of the same class, and they're druids.
Well,
one
see,
is Alliance,
to...
one is Horde, and the whole reason that I had them at max level was because they were gathering things for me. That's it.
See, and for me, it was I had to have one of every spec, and then I had to have, you know, one for each faction on, like, you know, multiples on the side and stuff like that. So I just wound up, like, I think it was Wrath. I wound up with 5 max level shaman, and it was, you know, 2 Horde, 3 Alliance. And then I just, as expansions go, I was like, well, I mean, they're already there. It's like a short grind to the top. Why, okay, I'll just keep them up. So I just kept doing it and then kept doing it. And then I'm going to do it again.
See, my completionist thing is like collecting stuff. It's never been have one of every class. It's always been let's gather every rock in the game or something stupid like that.
So for me, I'll tell you the truth. For me, it's this expansion that's made me pick it back up.
Oh, yeah.
Because before it was there was no realm transfer or any of that stuff back when I started. So
yeah.
I just when I wanted to play with friends, they were always on a different server. So I'd always have to roll a new character. So I always rolled a warrior.
Right.
Because I know the class. So and then I got kind of this weird thing where I'm like, I'll have one of every race. And then I was like, but wait, there's male and female versions of every race. I need to have one of each so that they have different animations. And then, of course, you know, they netted me and took me to an asylum. But I escaped and continued to play World of Warcraft. But going into this expansion.
So you did get the file and the cake. OK, good.
Yeah,
to know.
I need to see all the artifact stuff. Like all 3 of them on multiple characters.
It is a lot of lore to.
It is. It really is. Yeah.
I mean, I need to see it on my paladin.
You thought Warlords of Draenor had a lot of lore in the leveling experience. I think that Legion probably eclipses that by a good margin.
Yeah. Oh,
I'm just hoping that the end game, once you get to that point, once you get to max level, like the max level content holds up just as well as the leveling experiences right now, because the leveling experience is something extraordinary. However, we are kind of getting off topic here and not talking about lore at all, and we probably should do that because this is a lore podcast.
Well, I mean, we are kind of talking about our motivations behind doing this is lore based. Right. So I mean, kind of. Okay, yeah, let's go.
Anyway, Rossi wasn't here last time. We had Mitch and we were talking about Demon Hunters. Rossi's back. So we're going to talk about what we didn't talk about last time, and that's the audio drama that came out, the Tomb of Sargeras, and we're also going to talk about Gul'dan, we're going to talk about Khadgar, we're going to talk about maybe a little bit of Medivh, because there's some craziness going on there that I want to talk about. But I definitely, as far as with the Tomb of Sargeras audio drama that came out, that I wanted you here to talk about, Rossi, because I know you're going to have loads to say about Gul'dan. So why don't you just go ahead and start?
Well, for starters, if you listen to the whole thing, one of the things that struck me was that
start with the end of it. Let's start with like.
Oh, okay, fine. Overall, one of the things fascinating about it is how they plop Gul'dan into this situation. That Kil'jaeden is not above reprimanding him via situation. Like, he got dropped onto Azeroth kind of unceremoniously.
Got kind of drop kicked through a portal.
And Gul'dan, being who he is, immediately responded to this, you know, when life gives you Nightfallen, make Nightfallenade, and almost immediately kills one. But the way he kills him is so Gul'dan, in that the Nightfallen are addicted to magic. And so this guy sensed the magic in Gul'dan and tried to feed on it. So Gul'dan fed him till he exploded. That's Gul'dan's hello to Azeroth. Is not only does he kill someone, he gives them an ironic death.
It was kind of cruel, but yeah, that's just pretty much who Gul'dan is at this point.
Well, no, that's perfect. It's perfect because it's like he's channeling that fell energy straight through him. It's also very Legion-y. Let's be honest. I'm going to kill you by giving you the thing you want the most. It was perfect.
And from the beginning, the auto drama does a really good job of showcasing not just Gul'dan's personality and not just his arrogance, but his competence. Like, because we've gotten into our heads that Gul'dan is a kickover, that we can just take him out whenever we want. And here you get to see Gul'dan isn't at all. You know, you can't just push him over. You can't just ignore him. He's not, you know, just some guy you raid and defeat. He's a serious threat, and he demonstrates it by not only evading the Watchers, he evades Khadgar, who's looking for him. Khadgar's
not one of those people that's easily avoided.
No.
I mean, those little arcane construct things that he sends out, man, those things can find me anywhere.
They've done a really good job of setting up the Khadgar-Gul'dan conflict. And also they did a good job of addressing something that you talked about, which was probably something you want to pick up at this point. But the idea of this Gul'dan versus the other Gul'dan. Because up till now, we have never had a direct statement as to whether or not Gul'dan knows.
Yeah, we didn't have any kind of direct confirmation about whether or not. We actually talked about that in the last show, where we weren't sure whether Gul'dan really knew. It wasn't the last show. It was the last show where you were here, Rossi. Yeah. We talked about it, where we weren't sure exactly if Gul'dan was aware of his other self, or if he'd been told about his other self, or how much the Legion had told him when they approached him in that animated short. And now we've actually got some clarification on that, and it turns out that, yes, they did tell Gul'dan what was going on, up to a point. And it's almost kind of a direct parallel to what Garrosh showed his father. He showed him the history of the First and Second War, like, up to a point. Up to the point where Thrall starts doing good stuff, and then he, like, cut it off right there, because he's like, I don't want you to like that orc. He's a bad guy. I'm just going to show you this other stuff that happened. And as far as Gul'dan is concerned, they showed him what he had done, but they didn't show him how that other Gul'dan had died. They didn't even tell him.
Well, he knew, but he knows that that Gul'dan died. Like,
he knows that he did, but he didn't know the circumstances around it. Like, he had no idea that it was because the Legion, like a horde of angry demons, ripped him apart. He wasn't aware of that. So I thought it was interesting that we finally got direct confirmation of, oh, there was another Gul'dan. okay, so this is not the same Gul'dan. This is a different Gul'dan. And I mean, that's pretty much what we've been assuming all along, but it was never really directly confirmed, and it was directly confirmed here.
And what's interesting here, too, is not just that we now know that he knows, but how angry it made him.
Yeah.
To be constantly compared to the other Gul'dan. He's like, you know, that wasn't me.
It wasn't me.
Yeah, it's like, and the audio performance itself is really good. And one of the ways it's really good is, keep in mind, it's one actor doing everybody.
Yeah.
He's doing all the voices. And one of the things I really liked about it was he captured one of my favorite characters is Maiev Shadowsong.
He got her.
Yeah, he got Maiev's arrogance. Like, and not just her arrogance, but her, like, real lack of patience. For all that this is a woman who watched a guy for 10,000 years, Maiev Shadowsong lacks patience. It might make sense that she lacks patience because she's had to use so much of it. But the Maiev you hear is not, she's straight up, Archmage Khadgar comes to her and she barely has time for him. Like, she's like, whatever.
I do like that Maiev flat out pointed out,
Yeah,
we sent Cordana with you, and what happened with that exactly? Yeah. You messed that up. And Maiev is probably the first person to call Khadgar, like, take him to task for being reckless and being, you know, all of the things that he was during Warlords. Was he powerful? Yes. Was he reckless? Absolutely. And Cordana kind of paid the cost for that. She paid the price for that. It's interesting to me because I just finished the Legendary Quest chain. I just finished it last week, so I got to see, like, all of this, like, in person instead of secondhand through videos and things like that. And it's just interesting how quickly Cordana kind of crossed the line and decided that the Legion was a better place to be. And I mean, part of it, you could argue that part of it was the corruption, but part of it, it felt almost like an Arthas transition where she was like, you're doing enough bad things that maybe I need to join the bad side to do some good.
Yeah, it was interesting that, you know, basically a lot of it came from the fact that Khadgar was willing to torture someone. And that kind of was interesting because that's a Kirin Tor trait.
Oh, yeah, they do it all the time.
The Kirin Tor are really comfortable
torturing. My first introduction to the Kirin Tor was in the Borean Tundra where they were like, hey, could you go torture this mage for a while?
Yeah, and that's... Khadgar goes and does that, and it's Cordana was like not down with that plan.
No.
So it's interesting.
It's very Machiavellian, which is kind of, I mean, just that personality trait for such a group that's supposed to be, I don't want to say neutral, but it's Kirin like the Tor definition of neutral.
The Kirin Tor like to play at benevolence and neutrality, but they've always been kind of like,
they have motives.
The stuff that the Kirin Tor does has always been kind of like on the edge of being kind of sketchy. It's possibly because their origin is from, like, elves deciding, okay, we're going to teach humans magic so they can fight a war against trolls for us. And that's where the Dalaran comes from. That's where the Kirin Tor come from. You know, so it's always been interesting to me to watch them in operation. We're still talking about the drama, right?
We are, because okay. I kind of want to talk about, as far as, like, the Kirin Tor and Khadgar in particular, Kil'jaeden even kind of points this out in the audio drama. He at first he does not want Gul'dan to kill Khadgar.
Yep.
And he points out he will do anything to claim victory. That will be an opportunity for us later.
Yep.
Because Khadgar will. He'll do absolutely anything.
So what made that interesting to me, though, too, is not only through that, but through some of the other things that we've been seeing happening with Khadgar in particular through, like, the invasion event in game, and I'm starting to draw some parallels. There's lots of times we lose track of Khadgar.
Yeah, he just kind of, like...
He's out of scene. He's out of frame.
Doing his own thing. And one of the few places where we actually get to see that in action is in the animated short, the Khadgar animated short, which I also love to bits. And it was kind of neat that the animated short actually had a callback to the audio drama, because the demon there in Karazhan says, oh, they were right. You would make an excellent addition. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, dang, what's going on with Khadgar exactly? I initially wondered what was up with Khadgar. I found him really, really shady. Over the course of Warlords, he continued to be shady. But then between the audio drama and the animated short and then everything that's going on in Legion, he's kind of fallen out of that whole, oh, he's really shady area, and more like, okay, he is a good guy with good intentions, but we all know what happens to good guys with good intentions in this game.
Well, plus, the things about Khagar gets me is there's a point in during the quest where he says something to the effect of, I owe it to the good man he was, talking about Medivh, it to the good man he was, not the puppet of Sargeras he became. Khagar's witnessed a lot of history. I mean, he's firsthand witnessed it. He firsthand saw Sargeras' first attempt to pull the orcs through and how it worked. He's seen, like, you know, the death of his mentor. He's gone through the portal himself and sealed it to keep, you know, Draenor from blowing up Azeroth. He's a living witness to that whole period of time. And he's been sort of stuck on another world since. And I get the weird sort of sensation that Khadgar is sort of like trying to make up for all that time that he was somewhere else. Do you know what I mean?
That's almost kind of a parallel to Medivh, because I always got the impression with Medivh that he'd gone into that coma, and when he woke up from that coma, he went into overdrive because he went into that coma when he was, what, like 15, 16, something like that?
Yeah, just
and
after
he woke up in his 30s. He missed a lot.
Wasn't it like 10 years, or was it more like 20?
It was 20.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what I was going to kind of touch on, is there's a lot of parallels between, at least in me, the characterization of Khagar and how Medivh, like, how he was. Because it's one of those things where you don't know what Khagar, what lengths he'll go to try to save the world beyond what we've already seen. But those have already been pretty extreme.
Well, according to Kil'jaeden, anything.
But and if that's the case, what is anything? Like, if he's presented with an ultimatum, like a no-win scenario where it's, you know, sacrifice yourself to me and I'll spare your world, would he do it?
What are we going to see him do?
Yeah.
Look at it this way. I mean, he's already done something that was so unthinkable to, like, at least one member of the Kirin Tor that she left.
Right. You know? And the other thing that I'm kind of interested in as far as the audio drama goes is that Khagar, he did not become a guardian. He did not even mention wanting to become a guardian at any point. When he went and reported the events surrounding Medivh's death to the Kirin Tor, he told them that he didn't really know anything about the Council of Tirisfal.
Mm-hmm.
And the Council of Six, the leaders of the Kirin Tor, they didn't really know much about the Council of Tirisfal either. They were hoping that Khagar would come back with more information about that. And he didn't. But he didn't report it to them, right?
The Council of Tirisfal started out kind of as a secretive
order. It was a secret society.
And even above the Kirin Tor, they don't.
For people that are coming from, like, the movie lore, that was one of the things that kind of, like, set me off immediately in the movie, was that Khadgar said, oh, he's in training to become a guardian. And I'm like, wait, how do you all know what the guardian, like, you have a guardian school now? Is it like Hogwarts? Because it was very hush-hush in the original canon. But I mean, I understand that there was adjustments made for the movie. But it was one of those things that initially kind of had me confused, like, right off the bat. And then I was like, nope, it's just movie lore. I'll set it to the side. Enjoy the movie. As far as Khadgar is concerned, though, he never really wanted to be a guardian. And I can't help but think that the reason he never wanted to become one is because he saw what it did to people.
Like, I mean,
he saw what it did to Medivh. He witnessed in a vision. He saw Eidwin fighting the avatar of Sargeras face to face. And he saw her defeat it, almost single-handedly defeat the thing. But then he saw what it did to her, and he saw what it did to her son. And, you know, there's, like, part of him, I think, that was like, yeah, I don't want any part of that. Thanks. So it's kind of interesting to me, particularly in the Legion lead-up quests, when he's confronted by Aladai, like the spirit of Aladai. Aladai says, oh, you never wanted these powers, even when they were offered to you. And I'm sitting here going, well, they weren't really offered to him, except in the animated short. But that wasn't the powers of the Guardian that he was being offered. So what's going on here? And are you even really Aladai? Like,
or even more disturbing possible implication is that Aladai has actually spoken to him before.
Possibly.
Because, you know,
spirits hang around in Warcraft.
Oh, yeah.
They really do. And it may be that, you know, he was busy. We don't know what Khadgar does when he's not with us. And there's a lot of fascinating things that go on kind of behind the scenes. And you kind of wish that you knew what Khadgar was up to. He's one of those characters where I think that they should give him a novel just so that we have that backstory of what he's up to and what's going on in his head. Because I don't think that we get enough of that.
I think they're probably not going to do that kind of thing before the end of Legion, if right. they ever do. Because I think they like him as that character that is kind of mysterious and does...
He's kind of fulfilling yeah. the Guardian role without being mm-hmm. the Guardian.
Yeah. He doesn't upstage us as much as the Guardian would.
No.
If there was a Guardian of Tirisfal, he would upstage... And what's really weird is if you... like, going back to the auto drama, I loved the fight between Gul'dan and Khadgar.
Oh, yeah.
Because Khadgar is more aggressive than Gul'dan.
Much more so. Well, he also didn't have a demon in his head going, don't kill that guy.
Yeah, but even like the way they fought, not just the fact that Khadgar came to kill him in the first place, but the way they fought was yeah. very interesting. I mean, and I'm going to just say it. Had Gul'dan not had access to the, you know, extra power from both, you know, the Legion and from the tomb itself, he probably would have died because Khadgar was just kicking his butt.
Yeah. And Khadgar could have totally pulled it off. I also found it interesting that Khadgar sensed what Aegwynn had been doing and kind of had been doing in the Tomb of Sargeras. There's the implication there in the audio drama that Aegwynn was the one that put down the keystone.
Yeah.
Like she mm-hmm. was the one that put down the runes that would open that portal.
Yeah.
Because only there was... without even knowing that she had done it.
Yeah, because she had Sargeras inside her influencing her. There's also like the implication that before she came there, that portal was sealed by the ancient Nightfallen, the elves.
Either the Nightfallen or Aegwynn recognized what she had done and put up wards.
I got the sense that it was older.
Yeah.
The original portal was actually built into the structure. And I don't think, let me put it this way, I don't think it was a Legion portal originally.
No, there was a series of events that went on there, and Khadgar was able to pick up on the fact that there was Guardian magic there, and yeah. there were Guardian safeguards put into place to prevent things from happening. So yeah. at some point, Aegwynn must have put down some kind of wards or something like that. Like, there was a double impression there. There was an impression that she had put in the runes that would open that portal for the Burning Legion in the first place. But there was also the impression that she had put up wards to prevent that from happening.
Well, there was also the impression, at least I got listening to the audio drama, that there was stuff put in place to keep the portal shut before Aegwynn ever got there.
So maybe that portal existed and she just discovered the remains of it or something?
Well,
I don't know.
They're talking about the temple. That's the original Temple of Ilune.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The original one. The Temple of Sargeras is actually the first Temple of Ilune. And we've talked about Ilune before. Like how Ilune is basically coming out to be a more and more important figure. She's at least as important as the Titans in terms of Azeroth's sake.
Right.
And there's a thing somewhere, and I can't remember where I read it. But I remember reading it, and they talk about how the Temple of Ilune was built for some unknown purpose originally. And it's where they had the it's where they basically were trying to get to. When the demons came through, one of the places they wanted to go was the Temple of Ilune. It was one of the things that was one of the reasons the priesthood of Ilune had to basically fight from the beginning. They couldn't be neutral, was that they were a target. And so, basically what I got out of the drama was something in the basement of that temple was always intended to open a portal. And I think it's basically something along the lines of a Titan Waygate.
Maybe. Yeah.
But a possible. Lot bigger.
I mean, the other option though too is, I mean, we don't know who else the Legion had been in contact with for eons, right? Like, we know that they went through the whole event at the Well of Eternity, and we know that all of that happened, but we don't know anything before that point. Like, there could have been minor influences. There could have been, you know, even discussions or creeping into the brains of the elves that were building those holy sites. Like, they're communing with deities at this point. And they think they're receiving these commands from, you know, these holy buildings. I mean, one of the creatures that they're contact with is the Deceiver. It's not entirely out of the realm of possibilities that, you know, he pretended to be a loon or, you know, did something that was so convincing that's like, yeah, you need to build this structure in exactly this way. This is how you're going to, you know, be perfectly in tune with the frequencies of the universe and, you know, influence it from that point on.
You might be right, but my thing is I think the Temple of Ilune predates the Night Elves, and I think it predates... I think it was built by Titanforged. I think it is...
Maybe.
Like Wormrest Temple mm-hmm. and, you know, various other sites. I think it is a Titan site, and I think that's because it's deeply involved with the Pillars of Creation. They've said so. One of the Pillars of Creation is right there next to it. The Nightwell has the... Which one is it? Oh, bloody hell. The Amon Thul one. is right there in Suramar.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see what happens. But what really, what was interesting is not just the stuff that Anne said about Egwin, which I think is real fascinating, that Egwin may have put in the things to open it and may have also safeguarded it from opening.
Right,
which
because implies it that said very directly, I mean, it said very directly in the story, you know, Khadgar's like checking this stuff out and he goes, now I know why this place feels so strange. I haven't felt anything like this since my apprenticeship. I don't know why I sense a Guardian's Might, Gul'dan, but I see what it's trying to do and I think I'll help.
Yeah.
So there was something else in there. Gul'dan even sensed it. He said, this was too complex to be an accident. Someone had anticipated this moment and created a mechanism to stop it. Another source of power was involved. Gul'dan sensed it. It was that other mortal, the one who claimed this place centuries ago. This was her work.
Yeah. So what's interesting there is if Egwin is both the cause of and the solution to this problem, we get one of the artifacts in Legion is her staff. It's Egwin's staff. That is one of the things that we get. So is it possible we're going to see more of Egwin? Is it possible we're going to see Medivh?
Here's where we get into some fun here. Okay, because there was, in the Legion intro quests, one of the quests has you go to Karazhan with Khadgar, and he's talking about when he first came to Karazhan, and you see this little flashback thing with him and Moroz, and it all flashes back to the Last Guardian, and it's great and everything, right? Well, then Khadgar starts messing around with the wards that he put up, and then an echo of Medivh pops up, and he yells, and he says, that which was foreseen has come to pass. The circle nears completion. Sentries, attend to our guests. Okay, what circle is he talking about? What is he talking about that he's foreseen? This is kind of, this little throwaway line is kind of indicating that this is all premeditated and Medivh knew that this was going to happen.
I don't know. Like, that's kind of weird.
Well, I mean, we keep getting hints that Khadgar's refused to take up a position of power.
Right.
And at the end of the Khadgar short, you get the sense that Khadgar is more convinced than ever that it's not his job, that, you know, the defense of Azeroth can't lie in any one person's hands. So
no, because if it's in one person's hands, that one person can be corrupted. If it's in the hands of thousands of people, it's a lot harder to corrupt thousands of people than it is
also,
just one ultra powerful guy.
Even if you don't corrupt him, there is the other thing you can do. You can kill him. Even if it is an ultra powerful guardian, you can kill them because we've seen a guardian die.
Sure. Yeah, they're still mortal.
You can kill you if you have a guardian who's out there fighting the Legion by himself. Yeah, he can destroy waves of them, but eventually they can take him down.
Well, not only that, but I mean, it's still all that power contained in a mortal frame. It's going to get tired. It's going to get hungry. It's going to need recovery. It's going to need rest. And you can't channel. And we've seen reference to that in the past. So you can't channel all that magic, all that energy without it taking a toll on you. So the Legion can just throw endless waves at a guardian and wear them down to the point where, or her down to the point where they can't continue to fight. And magic can only sustain you for so long before you just explode.
Well, I wasn't even thinking about that aspect of it, but like, look at the Broken Shore. Varian took out a Fel Reaver by himself.
Yep.
And still he couldn't stand against them indefinitely. So,
and, no, and there again, was just no way.
Going back to the audiobook, Gul'dan wins that fight because ultimately, you know, the Legion can just keep giving him resources until he does, you know?
And now I'm going to let you talk about that end part that you've been dying to talk about with Gul'dan. So go ahead.
Well, after Gul'dan and Khadgar have their fight, Khadgar had to go in there alone because Maiev was too arrogant to help him. And also because she had stuff she wanted to check on at the vault. So he goes in there by himself. And although it's a close fight, in the end, Gul'dan manages to tap the power of the portal beneath the temple. And when he does so, he basically becomes ridiculously powerful and almost kills Khadgar, but Khadgar has, you know, he ice blocks, essentially.
He accessed the console commands and typed in god mode, so, yeah.
So, and then he and Kil'jaeden have a chat, and he basically says, you know, Khadgar told me what happened to the previous Gul'dan, and I don't think he was lying. And Kil'jaeden's like, yeah, he totally
That's
wasn't.
That's the other fun part, was that conversation where Khadgar was trying to distract Gul'dan, so the best way to distract Gul'dan, he says, so did they ever tell you how you died?
Yeah.
And Gul'dan's like,
shut
no,
up.
No, they did not.
Shut too. There's the really fascinating thing is that when Gul'dan calls Kil'jaeden on this, Kil'jaeden is rightly upfront about it. He's like, yeah, you betrayed us. We killed you. And you deserve to die for your lack of vision. And Gul'dan's like, I don't need you now. I have all this power. Blah, blah. I will conquer. Maybe I'll come conquer you someday. And Kil'jaeden's like, I'm done talking to you. I've laid it all out to you. And I'll make this point. For all that I'm called the deceiver, I've never lied to you. Not once. We made an agreement and I've kept my end of it.
And he has.
Yeah. And if you decide that you're willing to play along, then you put that power back in the portal and we'll come through and you'll see the Legion. Otherwise, you know, enjoy your petty little revenge while you have it, because we'll get there one way or the other. And when we do, you know, we will not forget what you've done. And he cuts off the contact. So Gul'dan's sitting there going, I can crush Azeroth easily. I can destroy them. And Khadgar and Maiv find a way in. Maiv has come back to help because she realizes, oh, that, you know, this ain't good. And so the two of them, Khadgar basically says, I don't think that we can stop him. And she's like, I don't see you running away. And he goes, fair point. All right. And they go in knowing that he probably will kill them, but, desperate to try anything to stop him. And he starts being concerned because he knows he can kill them, but they're still fighting him. Like, and he does a thing. He uses his the power of the portal and does this incredible magical thing, and it doesn't kill them. And they come back at him again. And Maiv nearly cuts his throat open. And he's like, "What is going on? They're still. Oh my! It's just like on Draenor, where we had all the advantages. We had everything figured out. We had them beat." And they kept coming, and they beat the Iron Horde, and they fought Archimonde. And they won't run from Archimonde. What will they run from? What could possibly scare them if they're this entire planet is full of crazy people?
Khadgar and Maiv were just the first of many crazy, foolhardy people who would striking him down.
Those maniacs that fought the Iron Horde, beat the Iron Horde, beat the fell corrupted Iron Horde, and beat Archimonde are going to come for him. And he doesn't have anyone backing him up. And he has no idea how powerful they are.
So here's the fun part. It's almost, in a way, like we're a reverse Legion.
Yeah.
Because the Legion can keep coming. It can keep coming. It can keep, you know, beating us down, wearing us down. And we can kill it, and it will come back again. And what Gul'dan is realizing here is that he could kill these two really powerful people, but there are just as many really powerful people who will hunt him to the ends of the earth and beyond if necessary, because they've shown they could do that. And if he doesn't have an army to match their army, he's going to lose.
And that's exactly why he decides to go along with Kil'jaeden and open the portal, because of us. Because he's scared of us. You know, once again, the heroes of Azeroth have managed to make things worse.
That seems to be our MO.
But the best part, though, is when he does this, when he opens the portal, he distinguishes himself in Kil'jaeden's eyes. And Kil'jaeden now respects him. He's like, yes, you finally demonstrated the vision that you lacked. You know, and now the
vision
Legion...
that he'd hoped that Gul'dan would have. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because so he's still got more plans for him, too. And he's been upfront about that. He's like, you have a lot more potential and I need you alive.
Yeah, and it's funny because in a way, Kil'jaeden has finally found the proper apprentice. You know what I mean? He's finally
definitely
found somebody.
Definitely impressed, because he says flat out, he says, watch, see what you will inherit. And then he shows him the might of the Legion, like all of it. And Gul'dan's like, kid in a candy store.
Well, and from what we understand from Gul'dan's short, that's the perfect thing to show him.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, coming from that weakness, coming from that exiledom, coming, you know, from that area where he had no agency in his life, now he's going to have agency over the entirety of the universe. Like, yeah, that's
heck of a cookie. And Gul'dan's whole hesitance about this, not hesitance, it was like just he didn't want to do it. The whole reason he didn't want to do it was because he said, I will serve no one. I'm not going to serve anyone. I will be my own master.
But show him that he's going to be the master.
Well,
yeah.
Well, then he realized what being his own master entailed. It entailed going up against all of these madmen, wardens and former guardians and all this other stuff, you know, going up against them all by himself, Whereas if he just did this simple task of serving Kil Jaeden, he would in turn be master of armies upon armies.
And it's
that
really
was
interesting.
Enough for him.
Yeah, there's an interesting point in the conversation between him and Kil Jaeden where he's like, I will have no one will tell me what to do, master. And Kil Jaeden's like, don't be a fool. You have two choices in life. Serve something greater than yourself or die alone. I have a master. If I have a master, do you honestly think you can get away without having one? That's like a really powerful thing to discuss, because in a way it's true even of people who are like good hearted. They serve something.
The only being that doesn't apply to really is Sargeras, because he's at the top of the food chain there.
Except he serves something greater than himself. Even if he is crazy, he believes that what he's doing is in the best interest of the universe. He's a servant to that goal.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing. I mean, if you talk about like even the greatest heroes and most noble souls on Azeroth, they still are servants. They serve, you know, the greater
kingdoms
good, serve the world
good,
or kingdoms or what have you. There's an idea here that transcends morality. In a way, it's you can be the noblest or the most vile. You can be a saint or a sinner, but there's an idea of you need something bigger than yourself. If Kil Jaeden is telling you, you know, I'm not my own master. I serve something larger than myself, and that's a really interesting way to go into this expansion, where you've got this army that fights across entire universes, coming to Azeroth to destroy it, and Gul'dan finally gets Gul'dan, who is the ultimate self-centered person. Gul'dan, who is like has always been out for himself, has finally realized, in order to achieve my vision, I have to serve something greater than myself.
You've got
to
fall in line.
Yeah. It's really an interesting narrative choice, because it is the difference between the two Gul'dans. The first Gul'dan never realized this and died for it.
And possibly that's because of just the difference in the, I don't want to say the difference in the origin story between the two, but I think that might play into it, because, you know, the first Gul'dan might have been, you know, devoid of that sort of awakening experience, where it's like, he's never been in that position where that's ever been a thing. He's always been able to be on his own or run things or do things from the shadows. And we know for a certain amount that that's true, right? Like the Shadow Council and everything else. He called the shots. He pulled the strings behind the scene.
He even pulled the strings. Yeah, he even pulled the strings behind Blackhand.
Yeah, he did everything. This was all his machinations. All of it was.
He was a puppet master.
And he had nobody telling him, you will fail because you don't serve anything greater than yourself. That he had never had that revelation moment, and all of his actions up to that point never really swayed him other than thinking he could do this. Whereas this Gul'dan, let's be honest, from the time he came into power, from the time that he started serving the Legion, and the time we got there on Draenor to kind of mess with things in him, we've been proving to him, and this is another situation where we ourselves are the cause of this problem. We have been proving to him that he can't do this alone. The entire step, the entire process, from the Horde to the Iron Horde to everything that happened once he, you know, the Fel Horde, all of that, we have done nothing but prove to him, yeah, you can't really do this, so we're just going to keep stopping you. Peace. We gave him that cookie. We gave him that nugget of truth. We didn't get to do that with the other Gul'dan until way later in his development.
It's just kind of interesting to me that they've built Gul'dan up this much. I mean, they made it very clear in the Broken Shore cinematic, basically the moment he killed Varian Wrynn was the moment that kind of sealed his fate as, oh yeah, no, this guy is a villain. This isn't just somebody who's trucking around Draenor with a cup of green goo. No, he's vicious, and he will stop at nothing.
The glee on his face, the absolute unquestioned glee on his face when they were trying to get away on the airship, and he just comes out and he's like, and he holds the staff up and summons the Fel Reaver through. It's literally, he's never been happier in his life.
Like, so the other thing that I want to say about that too, about this Gul'dan and what they've done with him, yeah, they've propped him up a lot, but they've done something that I feel we haven't had in a very long time, which is a long-standing villain that has substance behind him, has weight to him. Most of the villains that we've experienced, whether it's in the game, as long as it's not like Sargeras, are basically these one-shot servings, right? We get this big bash for that.
I thought Garrosh was actually pretty well rounded because he had a progression to him.
He was better. He was definitely better. But I think Garrosh was the prototype for what they're doing with Gul'dan right now. Because they're like, look, we can do this. How do we do this better? Hey, we have Gul'dan. Oh, this would be great. And it ties in perfectly with everything they want to do storytelling wise. So now we finally have a villain that is not just some schlub. I mean, even Garrosh got where he was going partially from other people pushing him along, right? Gul'dan is, at this point, I don't want to say carving out his own space, but he really is. Like, Garrosh was as much a victim of circumstance as he was a villain. Like, his brain was just not processing things the way it should. Gul'dan, on the other hand, isn't a victim of circumstance. He's somebody who had a terrible beginning to his life and has now developed and taken everything that's happened to him into sort of like this arch villain status. And I love that. I love the fact that there's weight to him. I love the fact that he's present at all of these events. He's not just some guy that shows up once or twice and gives some weird speech and then disappears. And especially through like reading, because I didn't listen to the audio drama, which I'm going to correct. I read the thing now, with the beautiful breakdown, by the way. Even there, you see it's like he's there every step of the way. And it's the continuation of that I absolutely adore.
Since we talked about it, I will say this much, though. One of the things about the difference between Garrosh and Gul'dan as villainous characters is that there was a sense that Garrosh was right from a certain point of view. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The stuff he's saying
from his perspective, yeah.
From his perspective and his own standards, yes.
Gul'dan has never not been wholly evil.
Yep.
And this is an evil act, and he keeps committing evil acts purely for power.
Yep.
And there's a difference. Garrosh, I never felt like Garrosh was a villain. I felt like we had to stop him, but I didn't feel like he was the Lich King or, you know, the fact that he goes back in time to try and fix things, and he tries to fix things. Like, this is Garrosh Hellscream's problem in a nutshell, is that all he has is an axe. And therefore, every problem is solvable via axe.
Yeah, pretty much.
even time travel shenanigans are solvable via axing. He gets taken back into another world by a dragon, and the first thing he does is use the dragon's own artifact of power to cut his throat. Because that's how Garrosh solves his problems, with force. And you saw it from the first moment you really ever... Like, the first time Garrosh ever did anything in-game besides complain... When he's in, like, because I was just in Borean Tundra because I wanted to take my character to Dalaran to get the flight point so I could then teleport to Tanaris more easily.
Right.
So I just saw him in Warsong Hold talking to Sarfang, and his first he shows up in Northrend, and his first act is, screw it, I'm gonna cut a path for our army. That's
and I mean even before then, the first time Garrosh showed up like in Azeroth in game.
Yeah.
Was that whole pre-Wrath of the Lich King event where...
He immediately starts a fight with Thrall.
He starts a fight with Thrall because Thrall is not willing to send a bunch of armies up north and just take the fight up there.
Yeah.
And that's Garrosh's thing, is he wants to take the fight to whoever. He was very much a creature of confrontation.
You know, it's one of those weird things... I equate this to, and I know I mention this often, but like to a 40K thing, he's the difference between a sergeant and like... a captain. Like, he doesn't have a broader picture view, right? Like, he's very in the fight, in the trenches. That's where he's comfortable. That's what he wants to do.
Contrasting that to Gul'dan as a villain is a villain because it's a really Shakespearean thing. He can smile and be a villain. He loves it. He revels in it. This is a guy whose entire worldview is it's get what you can. And that's Gul'dan in a nutshell. He gets what he can. And I love Troy Baker's vocal performance for him.
He's so good. He's so good.
The audio drama actually managed to get it too, although it's a very different voice than Troy Baker's, but the audio drama managed to get that too, that sense of like...
That inflection and that intonation. Yeah.
That he's not just sinister, although he is sinister, but he's a cruel, merciless, and yet... He kind of has a sense of humor about it. And the sense of humor is even worse because he's laughing at people's pain. I think he thought killing Varian that way was the funniest thing he's ever done. Like, you see the big smile
on his face. Popped like a balloon. Yeah.
The big smile on his face as he's just as he comes in and Varian's like literally ripping apart from the inside, that's Gul'dan. And what's interesting to me is we've been told we're going to kill him in a raid. You know, that's, they've come out and said this.
Gul'dan? I thought it was a dungeon, not a raid.
It's a raid. It's the Nightfallen one.
Okay.
The big Suramar one. But the thing is
it's
that
not the first raid of the expansion. It's the one that's supposed to come out in early 2017, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been told this. What gets me is I'm wondering, do we actually kill him? And does that matter anymore?
I don't know, because
he's accepted his place now.
He's accepted his place and become one with the Burning Legion, then maybe he's become like the demons where he's impossible to kill.
Which would be another difference between the two Gul'dans, because the original Gul'dan never did that, so when we killed him, he was dead.
Yeah.
Versus...
Well, I wouldn't say we killed him. When the demons tore him limb from limb for his insolence, he was done.
But one of the things that even Kill Jaden says is that, you know, the original Burning Legion, they abandoned the orcs on Draenor, and all the events that happened, the First War, Second War, happened not because of what Kil'jaeden had done, because Kil'jaeden was apparently done with them, but in this audio drama, Kil'jaeden implies that the reason he left the orcs where they were was because Sargeras had basically told him, okay, step back now, it's mine.
It's my turn.
He says flat out, Gul'dan died because he split the Horde. And the Horde was doing the Legion's work. He flat out says this.
Yeah, he said that Gul'dan betrayed the Legion. And yes. Gul'dan betrayed the Legion because Gul'dan was in charge of the Horde. And he wasn't able to keep it in line.
And the whole bit when he splits off to go to the tomb of Sargeras, that's the sin for which they kill him, because even with Orgrim Doomhammer in charge, the Horde was doing what the Legion wanted.
And the Horde... Keep in mind that the Horde would have won the Second War had Gul'dan not taken off. They absolutely would have won. If Gul'dan had stayed put and they had all of the Death Knights and they had Gul'dan's casters and they had everything else, they would have ripped through Lordaeron like a hot knife through butter. There would have been no stopping them.
We can possibly debate whether or not the fleet that was coming south would have helped. But at any rate, Gul'dan definitely... messed up big time. And the thing is the Legion killed him for that, which means that up until the end of the Second War, the Horde was still working for the Legion. They yep. weren't even with Doomhammer in charge. They were still doing what the Legion wanted. And that's fascinating.
Well, yeah, because that whole lethargy didn't really kick in until after they'd been defeated. And once they'd been defeated, I think pretty much what that was the Legion just abandoning them because their toys didn't work. And yeah. all that fell power that they'd been imbued with just kind of leached away.
What's really interesting, too, is what does this mean for the future going forward? Like, what does it mean for, like, there's a lot going on here that we haven't even really covered. Like, Maiev, like, showing up to fight. I mean, for all that, you know, she didn't want to be there and didn't trust Khadgar, she still nearly killed Gul'dan. Like, she nearly
killed. Oh, yeah, absolutely. She's vicious. Yeah,
she kind of has to be.
Yeah. And I think that in terms of timeline, as far as this goes, the end of the audio drama, obviously, Gul'dan has opened the portal. Khadgar takes off because he's just frantic at this point. And Maiev takes off, and she takes off for the Vault of the Wardens. And I think that's where her story intersects with the Demon Hunter intro.
Yeah, I think that's literally like she gets there just as soon.
Gets there in time to let the Demon Hunters free. Because obviously they're going to need him at this point. And then witnessed Gul'dan getting together with Cordana and taking off with the one thing that she was intent on guarding, which would be Illidan's corpse. What are they going to do with that?
They even say, when you were there, you did it with me.
Yeah.
They even come out and say, his body is cold, but his spirit's still fighting. He will need to be prepared.
Right.
That's Gul'dan says that.
Right.
So there's going to be like...
The fun part is that in all of my leveling throughout the alpha and the beta and everything else, we have not heard a peep about what happened to Illidan. Like, not a peep.
Yeah, it's true. Like, we know that they stole his body. We don't know what else they did with
him. So is he going to come into play in the Nighthold? Because I don't think he is.
Well, he's where, you know, I would assume that he's wherever Gul'dan is, right?
I'm going to assume that he's probably going to be part of one of those future content patches that we just haven't gotten to yet. Which I'm really excited about, because it's like, what happened to him? Where'd he go?
We kill Gul'dan. They take Gul'dan's brain. They put it in Illidan's body.
Illidan becomes a death. No, they can't, though. I mean, something good has to happen with Illidan. Because he got the holy boop, remember?
Take Gul'dan's head off.
Right, but in the Illidan...
They deflesh it so it's a skull. They put the skull in Illidan's hand. And then Illidan is being controlled by the skull he's carrying around. But eventually he throws that off.
It's like a reverse Hamlet. But no.
I was not prepared.
As far as I'm concerned, you know, in the Illidan novel, there was that moment there where Illidan got the holy boop. He got the same kind of holy boop that Ur-El got from Velen, only on a much larger scale, because he got it from Inaru. Obviously, that's going to come into play at some point, right?
I've got like theories about what's going on with Inaru in this expansion, but I don't know if we want to talk or not.
Yeah, that's a little bit too far out of the way. Obviously, next time we come together and we record another show, we're going to be talking about Legion stuff because we're all going to be, you know, hip deep.
Two weeks into it, yeah.
Yeah. Probably with a 110, maybe more than one, who knows. But yeah, it's interesting to me, though, that, you know, there's this big deal made about how they dragged his body away, and yet we haven't really seen what they've done with it or what their plans are for it. And,
or why it's the key to Azeroth's destruction.
Yeah, there's nothing that's been said about that. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that has to do with the fact that you know, Illidan's spirit was skipping around like that. I mean, he was at Kil'jaeden's homeworld, wasn't he?
Yeah.
When he got the holy boop.
Yes, he was, yeah.
Okay, so obviously Kil'jaeden's got some kind of vested interest in this, because he had to have been aware that Illidan was poking around. That Illidan was doing something.
Well, they know about the Sargeite Keystone because...
They know about
that.
They got that.
A thought. Wait a minute. Do the Demon Hunters still have that?
No.
No.
Cardana does.
Yep.
So Cardana has the Sargeite Keystone.
Yep.
So now the Legion probably has it again. But they know that Illidan was going for it.
Right. So they have kind of like an inkling into what he'd had planned. But... He isn't really able to do anything at the moment. So yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, well, obviously this is stuff that's going to come up in future patches. And this also makes me excited for future patches. And it also makes me say, if you haven't read that novel, it would be a really good idea to read it.
Yeah, I can't recommend it enough. Like, seriously, if us gushing about this stuff hadn't convinced you, consider this me begging you. Just go read it. It's worth it. Trust me.
If nothing else, by the way, if you've read the novel, the stuff Altruis is saying in the Demon Hunter starting zone will make a lot more sense.
Yeah, it does. Quite a bit more.
It's actually one of the downsides, I will say this. The Demon Hunter starting zone is really well done. The cinematics for it are really good, but they don't do a good enough job giving you, if you play through it, it sort of front loads you towards Kane.
Yeah, very much.
And so,
I mean, even to the point where you click on the waters and you see the Harbinger's short.
Yeah.
And you see that Illidan does have good intentions, vicious intentions, but good intentions, because that viciousness is totally directed at the Burning Legion.
And they don't show you like his how he planned to and then did murder thousands of people. He actually like got Maiev to lead an army against him so he could kill it for the purposes of a ritual.
To feed that portal that opened up into another world.
So Altruis' side really isn't given a lot of weight. So it's very hard to go with Altruis.
But he's also kind of worthy to go with, though, because he does make an interesting point.
Yeah. You just don't get it. It doesn't get enough narrative shown.
No, I don't think it does.
Yeah, that's the one downside I have of the Demon Hunter thing. It's very hard to pick Altruis. Whereas you really should, it should be more of a hard choice.
So my question is, Khadgar has no intentions of being a guardian. Do you think maybe he's going to be shoved into that role anyway, whether he likes it or not?
I think that is a possibility, and I was actually thinking about that. It's totally something that he may not have a choice over. It may be thrust upon him in such a manner where he'll have to reach for that power, because it's there somewhere.
Oh, well, here's another problem, an interesting take on that. If you're a mage, you become head of the Tirith Fallen.
Yeah.
Which was an order the Order of Tirith Fall made to watch, basically, you know, what if the Guardian goes nuts? We need this order.
Right.
And the thing is that you get made that in Dalaran. So the Tirith Fallen did not work for the Kirin Tor.
The secrets of the Guardians are no longer secrets at this point in time. They may have been when Khadgar was young and when Medivh died and everything, but ever since then, obviously, those secrets have been kind of revealed over the process of time.
To a degree.
I mean, Jaina met Aegwynn face to face. She was hanging out with her for quite a while.
That's actually another interesting thing is where does... Khadgar is possibly a choice for the Guardian, but he's going to be front and center fighting this. And he said no multiple times. I can think of a mage on Azeroth who's equally as powerful as Khadgar.
And very angry.
Angry enough to say yes and knew a Guardian firsthand, just like he did. He studied with Medivh.
Do you think we're going to get a Guardian Jaina?
I'm not saying we will, but I'm saying she certainly could be a candidate.
She could be.
How much time did she spend with Aegwynn? I mean, at least years before Aegwynn's death.
As a player of the Horde, that scares me.
Here's the thing, too, though. It's like, honestly, I get why that Jaina's, you know, her depiction right now is full-on screaming anger at the Horde, but to be Guardian...
She's kind of justified in that, though.
Well, yeah, I'm not even arguing that, but to be Guardian, she'd have to be in control of her anger.
Yeah, she would.
Because the Guardian, the power of the Guardian is beyond anything a mortal mage normally wields. Aegwynn took out the Avatar of Sargeras by herself. She lived hundreds of years. She didn't age during that time.
She extended her lifetime far longer than it was ever meant to be.
Yeah, and then even after she wasn't Guardian anymore, she didn't die. You know, she
brought Medivh back from the dead.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential there, and I don't know. Like, Khadgar is not the only person who could end up with the job. I mean, Jaina is certainly a possibility.
Okay.
Meanwhile, also, there's another thing. We haven't even talked about this much.
What?
But Surmar and, you know, their Enchantrix, that drags in a whole bunch of other stuff. What's going to happen? Like, the Tomb of Sargeras is right on their doorstep. They're currently working for the Legion, and they predate any such Guardian. They have magical secrets going back to the, you know, ancient...
And they've had 10,000 years to quietly, you know...
Yeah.
Practice. Undisturbed.
There's two mages on Azeroth that I would put above Khadgar or Jaina. One is Ashara.
Absolutely.
And the other is probably the Grand Enchantrix of the Nightborn. She's heir to a magical tradition 10,000 years old. You know, she's got all this time. She's been in charge for that time, and she has access to the Nightwell, which is essentially another kind of, you know, Well of Eternity, and she's got one of the freaking Pillars of Creation in her hands.
This is true.
She's got, I mean, we're probably going to end up killing her, but I think she is definitely not someone to be trifled with, and she's got, you know, if Gul'dan accessing the power of the portal could hold off Khadgar, I definitely think she's a threat, a significant major threat.
Let's talk about, just to kind of wrap things up here, there are a few things, obviously, that haven't really come to light yet. Jaina's fate, like where she went to after she got mad, right? Illidan's fate, because we don't know where he went to after he got carted off by Cordana and Gul'dan. Medivh, because there is that weird thing that he says in Karazhan, and it's just an echo of Medivh. But the fact that it implies that he's somehow foreseen these things that were supposed to happen makes me wonder if he's going to be some kind of element in the future that we're going to have to contend with or ally with.
You guys both saw the Karazhan, Return to Karazhan trailer, right?
Yes.
Yes.
When Moroz is talking about preparing the place for the Master's return.
Yep, yes. I saw that, yep.
Yes, so 7.1 I'm really excited for.
I mean, I don't know how sane Moroz is. Like, you know, he wasn't...
He might just be saying things for the sake of saying things.
Or he might be
crazy and like, oh, the Master will always return. Or yes. he could be onto something.
He's bound to eternal servitude to whatever. And then, okay, but that's short list, right? There's a fourth thing on that list. And the fourth thing is probably arguably the most important. And that would be Rathion.
Yep, that's fair.
He's...
And they've said
above anyone else, he should be invested in all of this. And yet we don't see him.
But they have said that he will be around.
Yeah.
They have come out and said it. I think it was Eon hasn't caused this.
Yeah, but I'm a little, I don't want to say skeptical about that because they've kind of...
They took him out.
And put something else in his place.
Right. So obviously they have something bigger in mind for him, I'm assuming.
Hopefully.
But with those four things in mind, and there are probably dozens of others that I can't think of, like, right off the top of my head, we have so much kind of waiting in the wings for endgame lore content, if they're going to go that route, and also future patches. We do know that 7.1 is going to bring Karazhan back into play. We don't know in what context that's going to happen, and I'm kind of excited to see exactly how that plays out and what's involved with that.
I've made no illusions of how I want that to go down.
And I'm sure that Illidan is going to come back in a big way at some point, because, hello, he's in the trailer. He's been in all of the promo material. They aren't going to pull another Burning Crusade.
I still think they're going to anti-Burning Crusade it, where, like, the secret last boss is Illidan. They're going to just, like, well, we're done now, right? We've beaten the Legion.
No, I don't think they're going to make him the last boss, though, because he got the Holy Boop.
Doesn't mean he can't be the last boss. It just means they can't kill him.
It could be a redemption boss. We've done that before.
I feel like that they've put that thing into play so that, you know, there is a way to redeem him or whatever. But then, you know, the whole thing with Jaina, I keep expecting she's got to come back at some point. She can't just leave it like that.
That's not what
Jaina Proudmoore would do.
What if we have to pull a Sunwell and go inside of Illidan and kill the Gul'dan and the demon stuff
inside
to free him from
him? Are you talking
like we did with Caligos? Like, it was the
like Honey, I Shrunk the United Armies of the Alliance.
Well, I mean, we've done it multiple times.
Are we
at this
pulling
point.
An inner space with Illidan?
Sure. Dibs on being Martin Short.
Here's Illidan. Don't you want to be inside me?
No, but I mean, seriously though, think about it. Like, that could be a possibility too. It, like, maybe that's something we have to do with Illidan. Like,
look, here's what we know.
You never know.
Malfurion's going to give in to the chicken inside him and become the Death Clock, and then we're going to. I'm sorry, Taranda, but bok bok bok. Well, actually, in all sincerity, we do know that Malfurion's got some hard times coming for him. So who knows?
So we've got it neatly laid out where there are several plot points that may come traipsing back towards us in future patches. And for me, that's making Legion as a whole kind of, it's looking up to me in comparison to Warlords, where we only got like the two patches and only one of them really had
anything
heavy lore.
Yeah. But to be fair, that's not that Warlords didn't have the potential for more. They just didn't deliver it. So it's not,
it had all kinds of potential. It's just, we've never really saw it.
It says the guy that, you know, was like salivating to go to Farallon, and they're like, it might show up later, and then it didn't.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping. I know that Blizzard tends to take lessons from previous expansions and carry those into the next ones. And I feel like Warlords of Draenor was just kind of, they tripped. And it was probably the first time that they've really tripped up. Cataclysm was a minor trip up because they spent so much time focusing on expanding the lore, the leveling experience, that they didn't quite do end content justice, as much justice as it could have had. But people were still, by and large, pretty happy with that expansion. They weren't mad at it. Mists of Pandaria still, I think, as far as lore goes, is right at the top of the list for expansions, as far as I'm concerned, because I think that they delivered on all fronts.
I would agree with that, yeah.
And Warlords, it feels like they tripped. They tripped on the sidewalk, fell, scuffed their knees. They're in the middle of standing up, brushing themselves off. And I get the distinct feeling just from playing through the alpha and the beta that we're about to see something extraordinary again. And I hope that's the case. I'm going to be really sad if it's not.
I really feel like when they started with Warlords, they got to a certain point and they brought in all those new people, and then they just kind of shifted it all to Legion. And
they really wanted
to
work on Legion more.
Yeah. Because it doesn't, you know, Legion just feels ridiculously dense. I mean, just the 36 artifact quest lines that you're going to be unfolding by themselves. So, that's an expansion's worth of lore.
Oh yeah, easily.
We need to go ahead and wrap this up. But as far as the audio drama is concerned, did you guys like the whole audio drama presentation? Would you like to see more of these kind of things where it's an audio drama versus just a story that they put on the website?
I absolutely love audiobooks to begin with. And whenever they're available, I will get them as well as the print book, because when they're done really well, they're fantastic. This, I thought, like, I, and not to say that I didn't listen to all of them, because I listened to the first two before I had to just catch up by reading, but I thought they were presented very, very well. I thought the quality of the audio drama was there. And I also think it's something that it's a media that doesn't get a whole lot of love usually. And I would love to see more presentations like this, because I think it serves the content. It serves the story very well.
I'm going to just say that while I thought this was very good and I would not have any problems with them doing it again, this was an audiobook. What I want from them, although I certainly don't mind if they do more of this, I want them to get together 8 to 10 actors.
Old-timey radio style.
Do an audio play. I want to actually do an audio drama, because they're out there. There's like, you know, Return to Night Vale and all that stuff on the web. There's a place for it, and I'd love to see it. But this was really good.
It was like a hybrid in between an audiobook and that. Because, I mean, they did have the musical score, which was great.
And the sound effects.
They had the sound effects, which were great. And the guy who's doing the narration, he was fantastic. And
yeah, he did a very good job.
Yeah, he was great. And I really enjoyed it. It's just, I'd like to see the same thing that you'd like to see, Rossi, where they bring in the voice actors and have the voice actors actually like play out the parts. I think that would be really fun.
Quite frankly, I almost hope they never kill Goldon just so Troy Baker keeps doing the voice, because he does an amazing job at the voice.
He's so good. Everybody involved with this is good. I mean, I don't think I've run across a voice that's like really irritated me. I'm glad that they've amped up the voice tracks for everybody, like throughout the quests and things like that.
They've brought some voices back, and even they're doing better.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of the voice actors that have returned are throwing in some really good stuff.
Although I will say, if they ever get into the point where they need like a narrator between like story scenes and stuff like that, can I recommend y'all talk to James Marsters? Because I would love to hear him like totally do the sort of overarching story and sort of narrator stuff for any of these, if they do like a full blown audio drama.
That would be pretty cool. I could be on board with that. Okay, well, that's kind of wrapping us up for this time around. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And for you guys, I know we've talked about this to death, but we're going to bring it up again. If you're listening and you enjoy what we do and you'd like us to keep doing it, you can help support us. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. One of the books that they have is Illidan. You can download that as your free book if you'd like to, and you can sign up to do that by going to blizzardwatch.com/audible. You can download Illidan. They also have a bunch of Blizzard's other books there too, so if you've missed any of the lore up until this point, this is probably a pretty good opportunity to catch up. Anyway, I guess, well, we're kind of on the edge of leaping into Legion here, guys, because Tuesday. Today is Sunday, the day that we're recording this. For people that are listening to it on the website, we recorded it 2 days before Legion's launch. So I'm guessing next time we get together, we're going to have a lot to talk about. Maybe we'll talk about artifacts. Maybe we'll talk about those pillars of creation. I don't know. We'll find out when we get there. But what are you guys really looking forward to lore-wise? I guess that's what our final thoughts are going to be. So real quick, Joe.
Oh, God, you're going to make me choose. Honestly, the thing that I'm looking forward to the most is how all of these individual elements are starting to come together into a very cohesive, overarching story. Because that's one of the things I feel that while a lot of expansions have had, it hasn't really been done super well. And I think Legion is raising the bar and saying, yes, we can actually do this better. And all these little things, all the artifact, all the NPCs, all those individual lores, the Order Hall campaigns, everything ties in to a larger cohesive story that makes the greater sum feel better than the individual parts. And that's one of the things I'm most excited about, is experiencing all of those individual parts and seeing how they all play into that larger story.
What about you, Rossi?
Stromkar the Warbreaker. I am a simple man with simple tastes. There's a gigantic sword that belonged to Thoradin, first human king on Azeroth, and it's currently buried inside a monster's head. I'm going to go get it, and then I'm going to go use it against the Legion. And I am looking forward to whatever that story takes me. Because we have not had lore on this in eons.
Yep.
And it's like all this stuff that you and I and Joe and everybody have talked about forever, and we're finally going to get to see it. We're going to get to see what the heck's going on in Tirisfal, the whole thing, why it's named Tirisfal. It turns out that it's named Tirisfal for a reason.
I think for me, I don't know, I'm just looking forward to seeing what the story department has in store for us this time. Because, like I said, I've played through Alpha, played through Beta. What's unfolding here is pretty extraordinary, and I can't wait to see where it goes once I hit level 110 and keep going from there. And 7.1, I'm super excited for 7.1. Medivh and Karazhan have always been like two cornerstones of my favorite things. So I'm hoping maybe we'll see some more secrets of Karazhan revealed or something at that point. And Rathian, I want to see Rathian come back because I love that guy. So that's about it. But I mean, that kind of encompasses everything. So yeah, I'm just really looking forward to Legion. So thanks for listening, you guys. We will see you in 2 weeks, and we will probably be talking your ears off about Legion and everything that we found in between. See you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.